Hello, Indigenous Earthlings. Here we are again, seven revolutions later, balancing into another Express Yourself. I'm Luke Nessler. And as we do the good work of knitting our communities together, it's important to remember the most vulnerable among us. One organization in our valley does that on a daily basis and has for several years. The River Bridge Regional Center is a nationally accredited nonprofit child advocacy center utilizing a child-centered multidisciplinary approach to the prevention, assessment, treatment, and investigation of child abuse. Like any nonprofit in our valley, fundraising is an important task. River Bridge has a signature fundraising event called Imagine 5 coming up next weekend. And here to tell us about it on Express Yourself is Megan Hurley, the mental health coordinator of River Bridge. Welcome, Megan.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. Thank you for coming in. Your organization, River Bridge, mm-hmm. is based in Glenwood Springs, but you serve four counties, don't
you? We served four different counties, yep. We serve Garfield County, which I'm actually an employee of Garfield County that is a donation to the River Bridge. And then we also serve Pitkin, Eagle, and Rio Blanco County.
You also get funding from the counties, too, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, we do.
That's an impressive thing.
Yeah, we're very grateful for it.
I think people recognize the important work you do, and it's as I understand it, the new thing that you brought to the table, at least in this area, is that you brought together all the services into one interview process with a victim. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think what a lot of people don't realize, because probably fortunately they haven't had to go through a situation of child abuse. We work predominantly with child sexual abuse, and the investigations can be quite complicated and, very stressful for a family. And so the way that it is dealt with when there's not a children's advocacy center present, and how we handled things many years ago, was that the family was having to go to a lot of different places and talk to a lot of different people, whether it was an investigator with the police department, with law enforcement, with child protective services through Department of Human Services, going out for a mental health evaluation, going out for a medical exam, maybe meeting with the district attorneys or victim advocates. All of these things happened in different locations. And so now, rather than the family running around, we all come to the family because we realize that this entire situation is incredibly stressful. And we want to do whatever we can to bring that stress down in any way that we can. So
I heard you say you go to the family. I was under the impression the family comes to you.
Well, this is true. Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. They come to us at the River Bridge. But rather than the family having to go to all those different agencies, like six different places, we all come to meet the family at the River Bridge. And so our building is located in Glenwood, and we have a few people that are employed on site. But for the most part, law enforcement is coming there, DHS is coming there, and all of these other services are coming there to meet with the family on site.
Okay, interesting. So take me through the process. A family decides to take that momentous step of seeking assistance and help.
Yeah.
What happens? How does it work?
Well, and I think it starts maybe even a little bit before that, when the child takes that momentous step of breaking the silence. It is incredibly difficult for children to tell about sexual abuse. We know the statistics are about 2/3 of adults never even reported in childhood. And so it's incredibly difficult for children to tell. Very often they feel like they were somehow responsible, they're incredibly embarrassed, and quite frequently they have a relationship with the offender and want to protect that individual from getting in trouble. Mm-hmm. So very often the child, they have to make that first step of being able to make an outcry to tell to somebody. And it unfortunately is very often difficult for that person that the child has told to make that call, whether they've told a teacher. Of course, those are mandatory reporters out in the community that should call and report child abuse. But when they tell an aunt or an uncle, parents, maybe a cousin, a sister, very often in therapy, what I'm hearing from a child is the first person that they told was their best friend. And maybe that best friend goes and tells her parents, or maybe not. But, you know, I think the next step is making sure that that individual is actually knowing how to respond and to make the report. And unfortunately, the statistics tell us that that actually doesn't happen as often as it should.
Do you find that you still need to do outreach in the community? Do people know that you exist and what you offer?
I hope so, but because we have been around, this will be our 10th year in operation, and so we have done a lot to try to put a face to sexual abuse in our community. It's an act that everyone wants to hide and keep silent about, and we're out there talking about it. So, once it does get reported and goes either to law enforcement or the Department of Human Services, the family is given information about our location and asked to come there. And at that point, the family will bring the child to the River Bridge. And very often the child is greeted not only by our fabulous victim advocate, Lori, but by Fraser, our facility dog.
The famous Fraser.
The famous Fraser. So they're asked, of course, if they like dogs. And if so, Fraser will come up and greet them and make them try to feel, you know, a little bit more comfortable, at ease, and at home. And so then the parents meet with the investigators and with our forensic interviewer, who is going to be talking to the child, and any questions are answered. And then following that, the child is interviewed and just given an opportunity in a very neutral, non-leading way to give their account of what has happened. And then following that, we want to connect the family with services, victim advocacy, to make sure that they can, you know, get medical or mental health attention without having to pay for it. And so they can meet with me about getting therapy. They can meet with our nurse on site about getting a medical exam or just having any questions answered.
These services cost the victim?
No, there is no charge to the victim.
Huh. Is this a residential program for the victims?
Would stay there?
Do they stay there?
Nope. No. It looks like a little cottage or a house, but yeah, nobody lives there on site. And what we really do is we work extremely hard to make sure that children that tell of sexual abuse stay in their home. I mean, the last thing, I mean, this is very often why a kid does not want to tell, is they're afraid of getting in trouble, being removed from their home. And so we really, Department of Human Services is always working to make sure if anyone has to leave the home, it's the offender.
Huh. How common is sexual abuse in the Roaring Fork Valley?
Yeah, unfortunately, it happens quite often. Nationally, the statistic is 1 in 5 girls and 1 in 10 boys are sexually abused by the time they're 18 years old. And I don't know really statistically how that matches kind of our numbers, but I do know that we've had a very busy month so far. Maybe it's because it's Child Abuse Awareness Month and people are talking about it more. It's also Sexual Abuse Prevention Month, so that probably gets our numbers up. But yeah, we have about 240 cases come through a year, I think.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
That's shocking.
Yeah.
It's pretty shocking. On your website, you have a link to an interview with Barry Lopez, who's a noted author. And actually, I'm well acquainted with his work, and I had no idea that he suffered sexual abuse as a child, and made a very courageous article, wrote about it, and you have a link to that. And I wanted to share one of the things that jumped out that he said. What is taken is that you can't, excuse me, what is taken that you can't talk about is the sense of your own dignity as a human being. And what's taken from you is the ability to articulate your meaning in the world. That's just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
How does that dynamic work? And how do you overcome that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, being the therapist there on site, you know, I really, my focus is always on resiliency. I really believe that people can and do recover from sexual abuse, and that we just need to get them on that path to resiliency rather than being traumatized. Very often, the kiddos that come through when I assess them are highly symptomatic of post-traumatic stress. And so we definitely want to get them into the right treatment so that they can recover. There are multiple resiliency factors, but the one that I find most interesting and really is the most common is having a really good support system. And when you really understand trauma and you look at traumatic events that recently, you know, we had in the news, the Boston Marathon bombing, because it was the anniversary of that. And what they find is that very often people that went through something like that, they have actually low rates of post-traumatic stress. Now, of course, they have physical trauma that they're contending with. But, you know, it's curious that how can you go through that and have such low rates of post-traumatic stress compared to sexual abuse victims, right? So what they find in the research is that those people have one thing that is incredibly critical to recovery, and that's a support system. And when you think of seeing these little kids at Fenway Park throwing out a pitch to Boston Strong and having a standing ovation, that is a wicked support system, right?
Yeah.
And so the sexual abuse victims that I see don't get that. They're very often cutting themselves off from the one thing they need most, which is a support system, by maintaining their silence. And in keeping that secret, they don't get the support that they need. So we're really working to help them build that so that they can get their dignity back and, you know, get on the path to recovery.
So that support system begins with the family, I assume.
It begins with the family, yep. Really encouraging the family to be completely supportive by obviously believing their child, letting their child know that it was not their fault, and then working around that. And that's kind of the point of the River Bridge, is to have one place where your support system gathers. They've got somebody from the district attorney's office very often. They have their detective. They have their medical examiner. They have their therapist. They have, you know, all of these people, victim advocates, playing this really critical role to make them feel like they are very well supported. And it might be a small support system, but it's very mighty. So
how long does it generally take to rehabilitate someone, a child who's experienced that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what I really focus on is the assessment tool that I use that measures post-traumatic stress. And so that is, at least therapeutically, as far as their mental health goes, when they are no longer symptomatic of post-traumatic stress, then I feel like they are definitely on the path to recovery. And so I actually do a, you know, a paper and pen assessment looking at those symptoms of post-traumatic stress, which includes avoidance, not wanting to talk about it, pretending like it's not happening, running away from anything that reminds you of the event, the re-experiencing symptoms such as nightmares or flashbacks, or just feeling like you can't stop thinking about this event and having all those feelings associated with it, and just really having anxiety and depression. That's a big part of post-traumatic stress. So my goal is always to reduce those symptoms, and I actually use a couple of different evidence-based treatments that generally I am able to have really great results in about 10 to 15 sessions of a huge reduction. I can think of a client that I just did an assessment on last week, and I think it was 11 times that I saw her, and her score completely plummeted down below the indicators of post-traumatic stress. So when you finally are talking about it and dealing with it and no longer hiding it, sweeping it under the rug, it is a lifelong recovery process, but I really believe that clients can make a new meaning out of it. And that goes back in reference to the article, right? Mm-hmm. And really talking about that. I mean, ultimately, it's the meaning that you make of any traumatic experience, whether you lose a loved one in a car accident, or whether you're in a community that gets hit by a tornado, or in a community that has a bomb, terrorist bombing, right? It's all the meaning that you make of it afterward. And that is going to really influence your recovery.
Hmm. Does it take longer if law enforcement is involved?
Well, I don't believe that that really has much to do with the child's mental health. Oh. It has more to do with the offender and making sure that there's justice. But I really try to work from a perspective, even though I really appreciate all of our law enforcement partners and they do very, very important work. I want them helping us to keep our community safe and focusing, you know, as on the offender. I never want to make a victim feel like if the offender maybe is found not guilty by a jury, or maybe if there's not enough to even charge in the first place and it doesn't go anywhere, I don't want somebody to feel like, well, because they didn't get justice, they're never going to recover, right? I have to really separate that out and help them to understand that their recovery is completely on them and the offender no longer has any power over them. So whatever happens to him is a whole different path that they don't need to worry about.
Are these kinds of services available, generally speaking, across the country, or are you guys sort of an exception?
Well, there's a children's advocacy movement that has been going on since the early 1990s. That's really when people tried to start putting a face to sexual abuse. This is something that, you know, since the beginning of time really wasn't discussed. I mean, the first rape crisis center opened, I think, in 1980. And so now we're really talking about it more. And I think a lot of women have a lot more power to voice their concerns. In the news lately, it's been a lot about sexual harassment and people are really learning to have a voice. But it's been a long process. But yeah, I would say in the past, you know, 20 some years, we've really made a movement towards the children advocacy model. And we opened in 2007. I think there are 13 other children's advocacy centers in Colorado. So, you know, it's definitely a presence, but I think that we always could help more kids.
How long has River Bridge been in existence here in the Valley?
Well, we opened our doors in December of 2007.
Okay.
Yep. So before that, it was a dream and an idea for many years prior, wow. And they were really working to get it off the ground. But finally, it happened.
Huh. Well, you're doing great work. There's no
Thank
doubt
you.
About it. Megan, the reason you're here is because next weekend, right here in downtown Carbondale, mm-hmm. or not downtown Carbondale, actually, over at the Thompson Barn in River Valley Ranch, you are having your big annual fundraiser. It's called Imagine 5. Why is it called Imagine 5? Do you know?
Well, because it's the fifth year okay. of the Imagine event. Uh-huh. So, yeah. So we went independent. Originally, when we opened, we were under a national organization called Child Help. And that was where we were getting a lot of our funding. But over time, we found that we really needed to be locally funded and locally focused. And so once that started happening, we really needed to find some other kind of funding source. And so this fundraiser was a big event that we started and try to really use it as an opportunity to talk about our organization, let people know about us, and then let you support it and have a good time at the same time. So it's a really fun event with lots of great food and drink. And
Is it named after John Lennon's song?
You know, I don't believe that was necessarily where it came from, uh-huh. but you know, that's what our message is, to imagine. Well, I'd like to imagine a world where sexual abuse no longer occurred. Right. And if we could really get communities that can really support kids, and kids can know that it's never okay for a grown up to do this to a child. And if we're no longer afraid to talk about it, because that's why kids keep silent, is everybody is afraid to talk about it. Very often parents, when they hear something like this on the radio, want to change the station because they don't want to expose their children to the fact that sometimes scary things happen. But we have lockdown drills in our schools. Unfortunately, they're exposed to the fact that some bad stuff happens. And I really think that if parents say the right thing to their kids, and kids can really hopefully know that I have to tell about this, we can't imagine a world where this will no longer be an issue and we'll work ourselves out of a job.
Do you think the onus for that change is on the family or on the community, or is it both?
I think a lot of it has to do just really with education and not being afraid of the topic. I think a lot of parents confuse sex education with education about sexual abuse prevention. At the River Bridge, we offer prevention classes for parents. It's a 2-hour class to help people understand that, you know, it's something that we need to talk to our kids about, and some really easy ways to go about doing that in a non-scary way. So all that information is on our website, but Yeah, I think that it's about the community and families and just really, and educators too, not being afraid to talk about it.
You mentioned your website, riverbridgerc.org.
Yes.
So next Saturday from 6 until 10 at the Old Thompson Barn over at River Valley Ranch, you've got some live music.
Yes, we do.
And a live auction. Is that donations from businesses?
Yeah, we have a lot of tremendous volunteers that are out there working so hard to get great, great donations for our silent auction. So it's a really great way to support us is by, you know, bidding on a lot of fabulous prizes.
Yeah.
And so, yes, we have a live auction as well. And it's just a really fun time.
And let's see, wine, beer, and a delicious culinary experience. Is it a sit-down dinner?
Nope. It's just, it's having some great local restaurants that are willing to showcase their foods.
Okay. And you also have some very generous sponsors.
Yes.
Roaring Fork Furniture. Let's shout them out because they're deserving of praise. Casey Concrete. And River Valley Ranch.
Yes.
Yeah. How
absolutely.
About that? Can people buy tickets at the door?
Yes, we prefer that they buy them in advance. But
okay, and that's at eventbrite.com/imagine.
Yes. It always helps to know how many people are coming.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I know this year we have something new, and that's a whiskey tasting.
Ooh.
That's a really exciting thing.
Okay.
It's all showcasing local businesses. So.
So, wow, what a great event. How many people usually attend those things?
I think we have a couple hundred.
Yeah. Well, I know you certainly have the sympathy of the community, and I know that you certainly are building those financial donations to you. That's really heartening to see.
Yes.
And I want to thank you for the work you do and your colleagues too. And I also want to thank you for dropping in on Express Yourself and saying hello and telling us all about your organization.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for having me.
Stay with us. It is 424, and this is Express Yourself. I'm Katie and Kay.